Okay, maybe it's time to start. We are already 3 minutes late if we are using the criteria of the college. All the courses start on time, so we are okay. So first, let me welcome you to this seminar. I think it is really a very interesting and not a very common event. You will find very rarely a program of a seminar which would gather so many top experts in the area. And I have the feeling that it will take some time before we'll get the same kind of group together. I think that at some stage before tomorrow night, we have to take a picture of all these people to make sure that this will be an event that will remain in history. So let me first thank the speakers for having accepted to come. At the same time, I believe that it is not too big a sacrifice to be in Paris these days. You have seen that Paris is completely gorgeous. The terrace in the cafe and the restaurants are waiting for you. When the seminar will be over, of course. You should have been especially pleased to know that we did all what we could to make sure that you would share with us a typical French event, which is a transportation strike. I had some problem because they made a mistake. They started last week. So I had to call them more or less every day to tell them, keep on, keep on, they are not yet there. But finally, we succeeded. So, and if, in case you are stuck tomorrow, no, on Saturday, then it will not be too much of a problem because on Saturday we have another typical French event, which is the Fête de la Musique. So you see, I mean, this is not, there cannot be a better time to be in Paris. Okay, let me make a few remarks to start with. So basically, this seminar is about trying to think about development economics, development and development economics, of course, and where this discipline is headed to. There's been a lot of changes, and I will make a few comments or a short presentation on those changes. And it is important to try to figure out whether we are going in the right direction, whether we are not missing some important issues. And this will be the topic for those 2 days, and the organization of the seminar will be with two types of exercise. One will be standard presentations of work by our guests on their current work and trying to see or for them to show that the direction in which their own research and the research around them is going. And then there will be two round tables because it was difficult to have 10 plus speakers around the table. We made two round tables, which is essentially about the main topic of this seminar, which is about the future of development economics. And the idea is really to look at different types of issues, and one way of dividing work would be to have the first round table focusing more on inward or domestic views about national development, and the second round table more about international issues, global issues, including, of course, aid and this kind of policy agenda. But of course, in economics, everything is in everything, which means that everybody will be welcome to intervene in either of the round tables if they find that there is something which has to be emphasized. Okay, so the rule for the presentation will be a standard one. There will be exactly 30 minutes for a presentation, and then we'll have 15 minutes for discussion. But let me try to introduce the whole seminar with a few pictures, which I'm taking from the presentation I made from the inaugural lecture that I gave for this course. This first picture is about the nice thing about development. And this is simply the evolution of GDP per capita expressed in purchasing power parity terms of 2005 since over the last half century, 1960 until 2012. And you see that all these curves are increasing. Some of them started a decrease at some stage, in particular sub-Saharan Africa, but over the last 10 to 15 years, it is increasing again. So from that point of view, we could say, fine, development is going on. And in all these countries, resources that can be consumed or invested are increasing. The same kind of satisfactory feeling is coming from considering the evolution of poverty in the world. These are World Bank statistics based on household surveys in many countries in the world. And you see on that picture the evolution of the proportion of people in all these regions who are below $1.25 a day per person and per day. And again, you can see that though these curves are declining, the red curve is for the whole world. And we started at a little more than 50% poor people in the world in 1980, and we are now close to 20%. So this is really a big achievement. At the same time, we see that this achievement is unequally distributed in the sense that in some countries, the drop has been absolutely spectacular, like in East Asia. And in other parts of the world, in particular in Africa, we see that the change, the progress, has been much, much slower. We are today at a level of poverty, the proportion of poor people, which is not very, very far from where we were in 1980, after an increase which took place in the 90s. So, and I don't know why, but the Latin American curve has disappeared. Latin America is still there. There is still some poverty in Latin America, but okay, sorry about this. But the curve is rather flat and at a very low level. Now, if we change slightly our view, and if we look at GDP not anymore in absolute terms, but in relation with GDP in the US, and we would have exactly the same kind of curves if we were to look at GDP with respect to, in comparison with European countries, Western European countries, then we see that the picture is not exactly as rosy. We see that for the world, in comparison with rich countries, the world average is more or less the same today as it was 50 years ago. When we look at Latin America, we see more or less the same kind of result. As a matter of fact, Latin America, in comparison with rich countries, is less advanced than it was in the early 60s. And we find, of course, that East Asia, over the especially since 85-90, is increasing very rapidly. We see that South Asia is also making up for part of the gap over the last 10 years. And we see that after a very, very long descent, Africa finally is starting to increase again, but the drop in relative terms in Africa is really quite substantial. It went from 8% in 1960 to a little more than 4% in today. So from that point of view, the picture is certainly not very satisfactory. In relative terms, development achievements are not that great. And another point is, of course, the diversity of national experiences. And here I simply put together this chart to show the huge difference between the well-known success of South Korea, the red curve, in comparison with other developing countries. Brazil is an iterative curve in the sense that there is first an increase until the 80s and then long stagnation and then some growth picking up again. Countries like Côte d'Ivoire, where basically since 1980 there has been a kind of continuous drop in GDP per capita, and of course China and India, where over the recent past we have a very spectacular growth. So this is the picture that we get from very standard series that we can find in any database. And this is simply suggesting that things are not all rosy, and in relative terms, certainly not very much as happens. Okay, now I want to insist on the following point. We can see in this big picture, we can distinguish three stages in development. The three stages are there. We have first a very favorable period, which is the 60s and the 70s, which ends up with after the commodity boom in the 70s and then in the late 70s, early 80s, and which end with the debt crisis in 1982. Then we have a period of stagnation in Latin America, in Africa, and then we have the taking off of East Asia in the 90s. And this is, especially in Latin America and in Africa, the period of the structural adjustment. And finally, we have the growth revival in the world, which starts at the end of the 90s, and which probably for Africa and Latin America is very much associated with a boom in commodities again. What is interesting is that those three stages, which are very, very clear on these pictures, are all associated with different views about development, different approaches to development. And those three approaches would be the following. The first stage is accumulation planning. These are the days of planning, and in those days, economists or development economists work on what is the best strategy in terms of the allocation of investment across different sectors, across different types of infrastructure to accelerate the process of growth. And modeling in those days is something extremely important. Then we have the structural adjustment period, which is almost the opposite. The idea there is to, instead of emphasizing the intervention of the state, it is, on the contrary, to give more autonomy and more power to market mechanism and to reestablish incentives. And finally, we have in the recent period, thing that we have that the dominant approach to development are, on the one hand, microeconomics, and on the other hand, at the macro level, the emphasis being put on institutions. So there is a, behind this very simple word, there is a very interesting evolution of the thought in terms of development economics. And part of this seminar is about trying to see or to guess what will be next, or more importantly, to make suggestions about where should we go from where we are. And I already took maybe too much time, I'm the limit of my time, so let me quickly conclude on this. Now, we under the two or three remarks about this. First, it is not clear that there is truly knowledge accumulation in all this process. It is not clear that what we learned or what we worked on at the first stage, at the time of accumulation planning, is extremely useful today, or is being used today. I remember in those days, and some people in the room would also remember that, something very important was cost-benefit analysis. This is something which has disappeared. And one may wonder why it is okay that it disappeared. Does that mean that we are not able to compute costs and benefits and to take them into account when deciding about an infrastructure in some region in a country or in some sector in the economy? Probably not. And it is it would be interesting to analyze why it is the case. Or is it the case that this disappeared because we thought that, in any case, cost-benefit analysis had led to wrong decisions, and therefore the methodology had to be thrown out at the same time as its the consequences. And we can make this kind of remark for many things which happen in the process, in that evolution. And I think it would be interesting to try to work more systematically on the reason why some instrument appeared at some point of time and disappeared at another point of time. But this is not the time and the place to do that. If we look at the recent evolution and the emphasis on microeconomics and institutions, I think it is important in the sense that it's very nice that the emphasis, the focus has been put on the microeconomic aspects of development. This has been permitted by the fantastic development of data in developing countries. We are doing things today which were completely impossible 20 or 30 years ago, and it is absolutely essential, of course, to analyze and to draw the lessons from this information which is becoming increasingly available. At the same time, we have to realize that it is not with micro interventions that it will be possible to create all the jobs that will be needed in Africa in the next 50 years in order to provide employment to 2 billion people. So this is fine, and we certainly should continue, but I believe that the fact that the macro aspect has lost to some extent weight with respect to micro is somewhat of a concern, and I think it would be a good thing if this group could reflect on this. And we could say very much the same thing about institutions. I mean, it is a fantastic progress to have gotten into the political economy of development, and we know direct observations how important it is. But at the same time, we also know that it is very difficult to modify institutions exogenously. So what are exactly the policy implications of all this analysis is, for the moment, it seems to me somewhat problematic. Maybe there are lessons that we can draw, but they may not be that obvious. So, to some extent, everything is happening. What is happening, then, one has the feeling that the profession, after a lot of attempts at understanding the mechanism behind economic growth and development, found that there was no very satisfactory answer, or maybe found that everything was extremely context and country specific, and then decided not to invest much more time and effort in this area. But if this is the case, it seems to me that this is one of the issues that we have to look at. In the same way, we have to look at what is exactly the implications and the kind of work done in microeconomics, how this can be used as well as possible in order to promote, to generate development at the macro level. So it seems that there is much to be done in this area. So this is the kind of general question that I would like this group to focus on. And I'm sure that by tomorrow afternoon, we'll know much more about all this, and maybe we will have a research agenda in front of us. So I will stop here. Again, thanks to everybody to be here, and we'll get into the crux of the matter. And the first set of papers have a more macro orientation, but maybe not, or maybe I misinterpreted what the authors told me. And the first speaker will therefore be Danny Roderick on structural change, industrialization, and economic growth. Danny is recently moved from the Harvard Kennedy School at Harvard to the Princeton Institute for Advanced Studies. And I'm sure that all the people in the room know about Danny and his work, and we are very happy that he's with us today. And without further ado, I call to Danny.